From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is Cool Science Radio.
Science and technology that's accessible and entertaining.
If we can understand it, you can understand it.
I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm John Wells.
Our first guest this morning is James Hamblin, who has written a new book called Clean, The New Science of Skin. Now, keeping skin healthy is, of course, a booming industry, and yet it seems like almost no one agrees on what actually works. Confusing messages from health authorities and ineffective treatments have left many people desperate for reliable solutions. In his new book, James Hamblin explores how we got here, examining the science and culture of how we care for our skin today. James, welcome to Cool Science Radio. It's great to have you.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Well, skin, our largest organ, and yet there are so many snake oils out there and so much confusion as to whether our skin is healthy from inside out or outside in. And you say it's a lot about microbes.
Yeah, that's what really drew me into researching this book. Like most people, I think I understood the idea of showering and bathing as trying to just get microbes off of you, right? That was the basic idea. But now, since we have, genomic sequencing capacities that we've learned in recent years, that we have a skin microbiome, just like we have a gut microbiome, and it's there with us all the time. We're never without microbes. And so that's, that would mean that's normal, and we wouldn't want to try to get all of the microbes off of us. They're not causing harm. They're helping us. And so apologies, there's a bit of a fire alarm situation. I'm told that I don't have to abandon the ability. But in any case, the microbes are something we need to embrace with our hygiene.
So let's talk about the skin's microbiome. I mean, one of the things you point out in your book is that we've finally tuned into our gut microbiome, and we now know that, a well-balanced microbiome and gut health is important even to brain health, for example. But we haven't really tuned into the skin microbiome, and we don't often think about the microbes on our skin as being part of a healthy balance and a healthy makeup for our skin. We most often think of, well, we need to wash the microbes off our skin to be clean. And that is a huge fallacy, as you've pointed out in your book. What are we doing when we put soap on our skin and washing off the microbiome, the microbes?
Yeah, that's a great question. And one that I was surprised I hadn't really thought about much before, because it's something we all do every day. And I should clarify also that hand washing is extremely important. That's the one outlier here where we just know, wash your hands, it saves lives, it's extremely important. No one is questioning that. It's kind of the rest of the body where we're learning that there's a lot of room to be more creative about how often and we need to do things. And basically, soap is something that binds, one end binds to oil and the other binds to water. So it helps us remove when there's something sticky, get some grease on our hand. It'll help definitely remove that. And otherwise, what it's doing when we're not visibly soiled is it's helping to remove the oily sebum that is naturally produced by our glands, and just sort of stripping that outer layer of oils off of us. But that also happens to be what the microbes feed on. So the soap isn't directly killing them, but it is, and it can wash them away with that layer, and it can also change their habitat. It's sort of changing that layer, that topsoil layer in an ecosystem. And the ramifications of that are something that we're just scratching the surface of what that means, but it's not neutral. It's not nothing. And there's good reason to think that it would be reasonable to cut back. If possible.
Well, we're starting to learn a lot about the gut microbiome, and of course, between the gut and on our skin, there's 38 trillion microorganisms, mostly bacteria, living in and on us. So it's our non-human half. There's a lot to learn about that. One of the things that fascinated me was the UC San Diego dermatologist, Richard Gallo, you talked about, and his most recent study. Can you talk about that?
That's one that, you know, this is a study in mice, we should be aware, but they were able to alter the bacterial populations, essentially put mice into an unnatural state where they didn't have bacteria on them. It's one called Staph epidermidis, and exposed them to high levels of UV light, and there were higher rates of skin cancers than those that didn't have the bacteria. And again, this is preliminary. It's simply a proof of concept that as soon as we found all these microbes, we started to think they must be playing some purpose. We wouldn't all be covered in microbes that they were for zero reason. And so people have been experimenting with things like skin cancer, psoriasis, eczema, acne, and just trying to understand how these populations might be affecting propensities for those diseases. So it's a very exciting finding that these might be helping to protect us from UV light, but it's also not time to cover ourselves in bacteria and abandon sunscreen either.
James, I understand that that for a while there you weren't taking showers. How'd that go with your girlfriend?
You know, bathing is such a really recent part of human life. You know, we used to, up until about 100 years ago, be a lot more comfortable with the way people smelled. And we tend to today think you either smell terrible or you smell like a cool ocean mist or whatever your soap or shampoo smelled like, you know? And it turns out there is just a lot more to human smells. And I get into this book and the potential, you know, roles they're playing and how we relate to each other and what we're missing out on by having not having those normal smells of people in our lives. And she says that she likes the way I smell. I don't smell offensive to people. I've asked enough people to know I don't smell like a body odor, which I used to get, but I also don't smell like cool misty mountain breeze. So it's an acquired taste, I guess. Yeah.
If you're just joining us, our guest is James Hamblin. Dr. James Hamblin. He's a preventative medicine physician and also staff writer at The Atlantic. He is also a lecturer in public health policy at Yale University. And he's written this new book called Clean, The New Science of Skin. And I'm wondering your interest in, I mean, you are quite a prolific writer. If you look up in The Atlantic and see all the stories by you, you've definitely been on the forefront of writing about clean hands during COVID and even a discussion about masks and things like that. I'm wondering what the genesis of your book was about in terms of, you know, looking at skin, the largest organ from a scientific perspective and not from that, you know, what the complete other world of what we do topically to our skin.
Well, yeah, it wasn't a natural place for me. But I for a long time covered nutrition, and still do. But, during the non-pandemic times, when more of us were concerned, had the cognitive space to have concerns about things like that. I got very interested in sort of sad diet books and pseudoscience and the appeal of these sorts of things that happen all the time in the nutrition and food space, which I think are often dangerous and bad. And I started seeing similar trends popping up in the skincare industry, and even similar vernacular about feeding your skin and we're putting vitamins in products and selling them to people for large amounts of money and making unclear promises about anti-aging and general wellness. That I was concerned about sort of misinformation and preying on people's insecurities. So I started to learn more about the industry at the same time that this new science of skin microbiome was really starting to pop out of the medical journals. And so that sort of married two of my interests and kind of this new idea of ecosystems on our skin that are clearly playing a role. So some kind of hard science microbiology that can really change the way we think about ourselves and the way I know it did for me. And marrying that with a very lively consumer industry, which is full of interesting stories and characters and people and firm, strongly held beliefs, which I wanted to go explore and did. So the book grew out of that.
So what would be the number one or two things that we are currently doing that you would argue we ought to abandon and do something completely different when it comes to our skin?
You know, if anything, I think that the book taught me that this is a really individualized place. Skincare is like food, the food we eat, and almost like a religion, where people have firmly held beliefs about what is good, and it also matters, you know, how they are raised, what their social circles do, what's culturally important to them, and what they personally enjoy. So it's really, really hard to tell everybody to do one thing, I'm not sure I'd feel confident doing that anyway. Just you know, I think this is something where people need to marry what's reasonable with what is important to them, just like we do with you know, the food we eat and the ways we exercise. That it has to be it's an individualized approach, and the book is just meant to open people that we should be thinking more of microbes, and that if you want to experiment with doing less, that there is no reason to think that you could be fine. Probably you could even benefit. And you definitely save something in water, plastic bottles, about yourself. The book is helpful on that.
Well, I certainly understand it's an individual practice, but when it comes to washing your hands, the quick rinse, a little bit of soap, 10 seconds, you're saying if you really want to protect yourself, you need to go longer. Is that happy birthday a couple of times? So, you know, tell us what you think we should be doing for hand washing.
Yeah, that, I think it's so important right now. And it's so easy to get confused in a book where I'm talking about the many ways of washing ourselves that are fine. The one hard and fast rule is hand washing. And I think the way to think about hand washing is the scrubbing is really the primary act. The soap is the action of the scrubbing. It makes the scrubbing more efficient. But the scrubbing is the thing. It's similar to brushing your teeth. If you put toothpaste on a toothbrush and just put it in your mouth, you know, you start to get clean teeth. And you shouldn't expect the same just from, you know, perhaps on your hands and holding them under the water. You really need to scrub. And that's why it takes 20 seconds. So it can work like hand sanitizer, which just, you know, obliterates everything on there. Soap just helps remove the fatty acids from your hands. Scrub. Enjoy the ritual. Just do it, because even after the pandemic is over, it'll be good to, you know, stop everything else that's by our hands.
James, can you talk about parabens, what they are and what we need to know about them?
Well, that's a complex topic. They're preserved that are in all kinds of things. And it's one of those things that has kind of become a buzzword associated with health, paraben-free, you know, something that people glom on that might have been a cause of a serious condition. And that any of these products contain an amount that is going to be harmful to anyone on their own. Yet at the same time, collectively, that we put so many of these sorts of preservatives in so many products and use them so widely for so long means they accumulate in our environments, in us, in ways that far exceed what would have been an acceptable level in one given product. So this is the sort of issue that is best solved with policies that sort of limit uses of things that we know are accumulating across widespread population use, because any product is not going to hurt you. The collective usage that is the issue, potentially.
So we, for a long time, and not sure exactly why I began avoiding parabens, but I always look for those products. And the average is that they have no parabens. I believe what you say about parabens is that they actually destroy microbiome or microbes on your skin that are helpful to your skin, in addition to possibly causing cancer. Is that correct?
Well, yeah. Well, so I posit that because in addition to the fad of having antimicrobial or antibacterial soaps and body washes and antimicrobial deodorants, we also were putting things that were intended to kill microbes into our product. They would logically potentially have that effect. Now, that's just a hypothetical mechanism. I'm not suggesting, we don't, no one has tested putting parabens all over humans and seeing what happens to their microbiome. And I'm going to suggest that we don't do that test. But that would be yet another reason that it's worth limiting their use. I'm hesitant on all this stuff. We want to scare people who, been exposed kids to them, because those are just hypothetical examples of an overall culture that has been really focused on killing microbes. And we're beginning to shift paradigm and think, well, wait, should we have been doing that?
Right. So question about probiotics and something called prebiotics, which we've heard of before, but I'm not really sure what they are. We know for gut health, take probiotics. But you've already said once in this interview that may not be what we want to do on our skin necessarily. What is this thing called prebiotics, and is that something that we ought to be putting on our skin?
Yeah, we start with the gut too. Saying take products is kind of like saying, if you're sick, you know what's good? Antibiotics. And in fact, antibiotics have a lot of negative consequences. You want to be retarded about what antibiotics you mean, and certain antibiotics are harmful and not others. And I think we should think about probiotics the same way. You know, like, we will find specific types of bacteria be helpful to specific people in specific scenarios. But it is going to be a waste of time and money to assume that anything that contains a bacteria is going to help me. And the same thing applies to the skin, where it's a great concept. I hope things there where it would be so simple as to say, I've got a flare of eczema, this strain of bacteria on me, and that'll count. And that's conceivable. And people are experiments. Or that you might have bacteria you could use as a sort of, to some more effective because it produces some compound that block UV rays. These are really exciting hypotheticals. We're not there yet. So you have prebiotics, sort of, are compounds meant to, the fiber in your prebiotic kind of helps feed the microbes and create a diverse, healthy population. So it's not bacteria itself, but it's helping those that are already there. There are the skin products advertising themselves now as prebiotics, which, again, longer-term studies will see if they actually help people, if they actually work. But it is at least a different idea than, it would seem to totally upend you of what it means to be clean if you're trying to actually hurt microbes on your skin.
James, we hope that we're marching towards a world that has a vaccine that will protect us from COVID-19, and we can get back to some kind of new normal that resembles where we started. Of course, things will be different. How does the pandemic give us a chance to re-examine our cleanliness and things that we should be doing?
That's a great question, because at the same time, a lot of people are very cautious now of hand washing and of using hand sanitizer and cleaning high touch surfaces, which is great, doing more of it. But all people are working from home and having more flexibility in terms of how often they shower or get fully groomed or even fully dressed. So we're sort of paring down to what is really necessary, what is actually helping me stay healthy, and what can I do without? Lots of what happens to my my body and in the smell when I don't go through the same elaborate rituals that I do, and possibly we're freed from the sort of social pressures that drove that, possibly because we just don't want it if we don't have to. So it's hopefully time to kind of take stock of what we're doing and really prioritize things that were either truly helpful or bringing away.
What is most of you've researched your book?
It really is about how elaborately marketed soap was. The history of the industry really drove our ideas about associated cleaning our hair, cleaning our elbows. And that made a virtuous, healthy, attractive person. And those ideas are really tough and classic in problematic ways, and they actually have nothing to do with health. It's a product of marketing. It's a product of putting these products into pharmacies and selling them right alongside medicines and actual health products. So I hope that it does it, tracing how those beliefs came about and then helping people to separate the marketing, from science. It's really surprising how baldly probably a lot of the marketing was in terms of preying on people's insecurities about being unattractive, being unhealthy, being socially rejected, all these things that are tied up in this, just to sell our soap.
Well, they've great job of establishing that, how to prey on people's insecurities. I mean, it's the thing that many people, I mean, no one likes wrinkles, right?
Thanks for tuning in to Cool Science Radio. If you missed part of the show or you want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org under the Shows tab.
We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows wherever you find your podcasts, so you can find them under KPCW and the individual show name.
So look for KPCW Cool Science Radio and take us with you on your next road trip or commute. We'll be right back.